Hello and welcome to Club Kingsnake. The music we've been listening to is The Beat, also known as the L.A. Beat or the Paul Collins Beat. And today we have Paul Collins on the telephone. We're talking to him. He's all the way over in Spain. How are you today, Paul?
I'm great. I'm very happy to be here and talking to you, Jeff.
You're one of the people that goes way back into the music scene. You were there when punk and new wave hit. You were one of the founding members of the Nerves. Blondie ended up doing one of your songs. What was it like back then to be part of the scene?
Well, you know, when we started actually in San Francisco, there was no scene. Mm-hmm. I remember the day we left San Francisco was the day that they had the first show, whatever you want to call it, punk, new music, new wave, power pop, at the Mabuhay Gardens. We left that night. I remember it was a friend of mine, Mary Monday, who was playing. We decided to go down to L.A. because we just couldn't take it anymore in San Francisco. When we got to L.A., the first thing we did was we went to the Starwood, which unfortunately no longer exists, but it was a fabulous nightclub. And we couldn't believe it, all the beautiful girls. And in fact, that night, Joan Jett was playing.
Back in her Runaways days?
No, that was Joan Jett. She had her own band, but it was pre all the success she had had with Put Another Dime in the Jukebox and all that stuff. She was just, you know, one more rocker in L.A. But after a few days in L.A., we realized that it was not going to be any easier than it was in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, too, it was pre, you know, the whole new music scene. And it was impossible to get any work. It was you couldn't get record companies to listen to you. It was pretty much a lockout on all sides. So much so that we decided to start our own club called the Hollywood Punk Palace. And that's where really the very first shows of the new music started happening in L.A. Our first shows were with bands like The Dills and The Weirdos and The Zippers and The Zeros, Darby Crash's the Germs, and bands like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody could find a place to play. So we said, the hell with it, we'll make our own place and we'll put all these bands on. And we met most of them at the rehearsal halls. When we were rehearsing, we would hear these other groups and we'd go, wow, these guys are cool. And we would go over and check them out and introduce ourselves, and that's how the whole thing got started.
I wore out my vinyl copy of The Beat a long, long time ago, and I've been listening to your little melange of the original album on MySpace, and it just brings all these memories back of when you guys came to Austin. You were opening for The Jam, and frankly, while I enjoyed The Jam, I didn't remember anything that they played after that night. You know, I was having a hard time hearing more than Chili say anything else, but
they were very loud. That was at the Armadillo World headquarters, right?
Yeah. I think there was a really weird band out of Toledo or Dayton or something called Wasmo Nariz that was also on the bill. That was a great show. I came out of that after hearing you guys play Rock and Roll Girl and all the other stuff off your first album. You guys, I thought, really blew The Jam away. Your first album was produced by Bruce Botnick of The Doors, and he really had your number for sound.
We were very lucky to have him as our producer, especially for our first album, because he was a fantastic producer and really loved music. And I think, you know, one of the best things he did for us is he really just tried to preserve our sound. He really didn't try to meddle with what we were doing musically. He just brought it to tape as faithfully as he could, and he was such a audiophile that the sound is just fantastic.
The album sounded exactly like the way you sound live. It was a perfect representation of the band, as far as I was concerned. You could walk out of the club, and the record sounded exactly the same. Later on, you got another producer for your second album, and he really muddied the waters. At that time, that wasn't necessarily uncommon. The Ramones had Phil Spector monkey in with their music as well. How did that happen?
Well, actually, what happened was we did get other producers, and in the end, the second album was an extremely difficult album to make. We recorded it 3 times. And in the end, we went back to Bruce, and he actually did tricky. And I think a lot of groups from the period that I come from, you know, that was one of the big challenges, is how to make records that sonically lived up to what we heard in our heads. You know, the music was so radically different from the music that we admired, you know, the Beatles and the Stones and the stuff from the 60s, especially with tempo, being that the new music really had accelerated tempos. And when you get involved in recording that, that's why I think Tommy Elderly was such a great, you know, asset to the Ramones, not only as a drummer, but as a producer, because I think he really understood that, especially producing the way that the Ramones and the way he played drums. He did a lot of cut time stuff. And I think he understood how to, you know, try to bring across that sound so that it was sonically robust and didn't sound all tinny and thin, the way new wave music eventually kind of got penned as being a very thin-sounding music.
You've got a new album that you did in your own studio over there in Spain. How was that process compared to doing it the old way 20 years ago?
Well, you know, I didn't really do it in a studio. I did it in my living room. The intention really was to kind of, you know, go back to the kind of honesty in recording that we had with the first album, even though we worked in some very good and very big studios in Los Angeles. After a lot of work in studios, I got kind of a little gun-shy. After a while, it kind of like the studio was overtaking the music. And I didn't want to make a record that relied on production as much as I wanted to make a record that really relied on the strength of the songs and just the... you know, the musicianship of the four guys playing. And I think we were very lucky. I think when you make a good record, I mean, so many things can go wrong. I think there's a certain amount of luck when it comes out right. And I feel that way about my last album. And I also feel that in a certain way, it has a lot of similarities to my first record. I think, you know, when you make a record, so many things can go wrong. I also, you know, you need to start with a really strong body of material. And I feel that this last record captured just the sincerity and the honesty that we were trying to convey, which is basically, you know, this is the music, it's the best we've got, and hopefully the songs will speak for themselves. And thus far, the reception of the record, which is not a big production, it was done for next to nothing at home, but there's a charm about it that I think is appealing to people, especially the way things are with technology and the whole studio thing. And, you know, I think people are now accustomed to hearing all different types and styles of production. And I think it's almost like, you know, I think it's being received in a way that people just feel it's refreshing. It's just simple music, and either you like it or you don't.
Who's in your band this time?
Well, I'm working with three musicians that I met here in Spain who are about 10 years or so younger than me. But they are huge fans of this music, and they know my material as well, or even sometimes better than me. And they play it with real love and conviction, which is why I hope when the people come and see us in Austin, our repertoire includes material from the Nerves to present day. And it really all fits together very nicely, because the guys I'm working with, you know, when we play the old stuff, like whether it's something from the Nerves or something from the Beat and, you know, all different periods of my career, we really play it faithfully and with a lot of love and attention to detail. And so the songs really fare well under that. And the whole thing works together as one piece. There's not a big difference when we play something from a new record and when we play an older song. And it makes it a lot of fun. And also, it's great. We have a great repertoire, and we have a lot of really good songs to choose from. So it's almost the best working situation I've been in, because it allows me to do everything that I've ever done in a way that is not embarrassing. And it's very cool, and it sounds very good. I think I'm starting to reap the benefits of being around for so long that now it's okay, you know, all the stuff you do. You know, it's like almost come back into vogue. So it's very cool.
You've got a South by Southwest gig. You're going to be playing at this point at Habana Calle 6 patio on Friday, March 16th at, it looks like, midnight, and that's down on 6th Street.
Yeah, we're playing there at midnight.
This is your first American gig in quite some time, isn't it?
Yeah, in many years, really, especially in a real pro situation. You know, I'm a little nervous, but I'm very happy that we're going there, and I think it's the right time, and I'm glad that, you know, the record is coming out, or just come out now, on Get Hip, which is a label who I've known for many years. You know, they're great guys, and so I think it's situation to come back into. We're hoping that as a result of the show, and we're going to do a bunch of other stuff while we're there, but as a result of that, it can kind of reopen the doors to come back and do a legitimate tour. I mean, you know, working in the United States has always been very difficult in the sense that there's so much competition and the distances are great.
Speaking about the doing other things in Austin, Austin and South by Southwest seems to be a hotbed for unexpected reunions. Peter Case happens to play South by quite often. Any thoughts of maybe staging a little reunion there of the Nerves?
Well, I don't think, you know, unfortunately, the Nerves, nearly as Jack Lee, Peter Case, and Paul Collins, and personally, I don't see it happening. I just, you know, there are certain things that you can't recreate. There are certain things that are better left where they are, like your first girlfriend.
No, your first car, yeah.
Yeah, your first car, your first girlfriend. Your first apartment, you know, all those things they live so beautifully in your memory that I think trying to resurrect them can be dangerous, especially because I think you know if you're unsuccessful, you can damage what was a great memory for everybody involved, in our actual people in the band, and then anybody who might want to see it. You know, the Nerves was a very special time for me. It was an incredible experience, but it was also a dramatic and traumatic. Thankfully, there's nobody crazy enough out there to really like put up so much money that everybody would have to do it. You know, so I think the world is safe from that, and I think it's best left where it is as a fantastic memory and something that happened a very long time ago, we were very fortunate to be part of something that had such an impact that even today, 25, 30 some odd years later, people know about it and talk about it. I think that is really something very special.
Well, I think that's really it. I mean, you guys have definitely left a mark, both you and Peter and Jack, and you yourself with the Beat. I mean, you left an indelible mark on power pop. I don't think much of the power pop that we've seen in the last 30 years would have progressed to the point that, you know, we've got Evan Dando and the Lemonheads out there without you and that first album that you guys launched, because you guys were one of the first power pop bands out there. I mean, some of your contemporaries, I guess, would have been Bram Tchaikovsky or Records or Shoes,
right.
You know, but you guys really stood out. I know that looking up some of the references for the first album, everybody always gave it a 5 or a 4.5, which I really thought was appropriate. So you guys did leave a pretty strong legacy out there. The new music that you're doing, it's supposed to be more of an Americana songwriter direction, is it not?
You know, to tell you the truth, I have no idea what they'd call it. When we went in to record the Beat album, I don't even think power pop existed as a word yet. I mean, I've always thought of myself as a rock and roll musician, and then, you know, what people make of it is you know, another thing. My main concern has always been the same, is to try to, you know, write and record and perform the best possible songs that I can. I mean, that's something I learned in the Nerves, is to have an extremely high criteria for the music that we were making, and I consider myself fortunate that I have attained or hit those marks every now and again. Obviously, the first album is, you know, was a very special moment, and I was very fortunate to just, you know, be in the right place at the right time, and the band was, you know, the whole thing was just a stellar performance on everybody's part. That's the beauty of recordings and records, is that they live forever. And we always felt that a recording was something that you really had to be prepared for, and you really had to treat it with the utmost. It was like going to church for us.
What was it like to tour with bands like the Ramones and the Jam back in the day? I mean, you've got to have some war stories that could entertain great-grandchildren forever.
Well, I think touring with the Ramones was really something else. It was a great experience, and they were a very funny group of guys. Musically, it was fantastic. I think that the highlight for me was I was booking the Nerves at that point, and I met Danny Fields, their manager in New York, and I was trying to get a gig with the Ramones, and he said, "Look, you get us a gig in Cincinnati, and I'll give you the Texas portion of the tour. And I picked up the phone in his office, and I booked the Ramones and the Nerves, the very first punk rock show in Cincinnati, at this place called Bogart's, which I think still exists today. And it was a real state-of-the-art big nightclub with an amazing sound system. And that night, that show by the Ramones, I mean, I was just there in hog heaven, because it was like the original band, and they just were like, you know, greased lightning, and the sound was amazing, and it was incredible. It was a lot of fun in those days, because a lot of the bands we worked with I really admired. I mean, the Jam, and when we got to Cleveland, we played with Pear Ubu and Devo, and we saw the Dead Boys, and a lot of the groups that we played with, Mink DeVille. We played with a lot of bands all over. And it was great, because musically it was really very exciting.
The whole time period was, to be part of it, it was historic.
We started out in a time, I mean, there was no technology, readily available technology to preserve a lot of that stuff. I mean, I have one cassette recording of the Nerves playing live at Pirate's Cove, and no videos whatsoever. And it's a shame, because, you know, a lot of those great moments were, unfortunately, at the time, nobody thought of, like, you know, trying to preserve them in that way, because there was nothing available to do it. I think what we're talking about is how, especially at that time in your life, how if you're attracted to music, how important it is and how meaningful it is to you, and how exciting it is to be part of these, you know, a new burgeoning scene. Because when we did the first tour with the Beat, it was absolutely incredible. We went all across the country, and it was very exciting, and it was very new, and it was very fresh. And you could really tell that everybody was just, you know, just on cloud nine, just, you know, and being a part of it. You know, I don't know how it was with the subsequent musical trends that came in, but I'm sure there were a lot of similarities for young people that are attracted to, you know, certain styles of music and to go see the bands that they love. And that's what I think keeps music and keeps it so fresh and alive. And it also is something that you can hold with you forever.
You've been taking advantage of technology. You've got a MySpace page. You've got a website now. What do you think about the internet and how it's changed, or how it's going to continue to change the music world?
Well, I think the internet is a fantastic tool, a communication tool. I mean, I love it. I mean, the website, I think it's great. But I think MySpace is just, you know, a fantastic way for people to connect with each other. I personally get a lot out of it, everything from offers for work to connecting. It's the way I hear new music now. I mean, prior to MySpace, you know, people would say, well, what new bands are there? I'd say, well, I don't know. I don't really hear anything. I don't listen to the radio that much. I don't watch MTV. But now with MySpace, because I have four different pages, and I get all these friends requests, and I always go and go to the person who, and a lot of them are bands, I go to their page and I listen to their music. And it's such an easy way to discover new stuff. And the refreshing thing for me is that I think there's a big groundswell again for not just power pop, but for rock and roll. And there's a lot of young rock and roll bands out there, power pop, whatever you want to call it. And it's great because, you know, the trappings are different, the technology is different, but it's still the same old thing. A good rock and roll band is a good rock and roll band, and that doesn't rely as much on technology as it does rock and roll and having some balls and know what you're doing and cranking it up and playing some good songs.
Well, we'll be cranking it up here in Austin come March 16th at Friday at midnight. I want to thank you for spending your time with us today. All the way from Spain. You're in Madrid, is that correct?
I'm in Madrid, which is known as party capital of the world. It's a 24-hour, all-night party here. And not that I'm out there 24 hours partying, but it's a very nice place to live. I live right in the center of the town, and I have a beautiful place. It's great. Right now, I do a lot of traveling throughout Spain and in Europe. And this year, we're going to Japan, and we're going to go to the States, and hopefully after the South by Southwest, we'll put together a real tour and go play the East Coast and the West Coast again. And, I think it's a really good time again. The 90s for me was not that great a time. Now it really feels like, you know, it's happening again, and I'm very happy to be out there and work in the scene and being part of it.
Well, I look forward to seeing you play coming up here in South by Southwest. Once again, that'll be at Habana Calle. Maybe you've got this Spanish thing down a little bit better. Maybe you should tell everybody.
Yeah, I think it's called the Havana Calle or the Havana Patio.
Havana Calle Patio.
Yeah, And we're going to be there at midnight, and it's going to be a get-hit night, so the Cynics are playing, and the Ugly Beats are playing, and a few other bands. And then we're going to do what I guess everybody else does. We're going to be playing here and there. We got something on Saturday. We're going to stop by and see you. We're going to do something with the Barnes & Noble folks. We're going to milk it for everything we can.
Do it. And while you're doing it, have some great Mexican food and some great barbecue and enjoy yourself here. And I look forward to sitting down with you and putting some of this on video.
Okay, that would be great. Thanks so much for taking the time out to talk to me, Jeff. And I look forward to meeting you out there in South by Southwest.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. Everybody, this is Jeff Berenger at Club Kingsnake. Thank you very much for listening.